patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So not everybody gets to ride off into the sunset quite like Albert Pujols did last year. Although Miguel Cabrera had a fairly significant hit last night. He hit that double in, I think it was the seventh inning. And that was his 1,132nd extra base hit. He took sole position of 15th all time in Major League Baseball.
Not bad.
For extra base hits, he's only five behind Ty Cobb. So that is definitely a record that should be broke this season. Now, listen, Miguel Cabrera, 42 years old, he is for sure a Hall of Famer. Like, first ballot, there is no doubt. He's going to need to wait that five ridiculous years they make you wait, but he is without a doubt a Hall of Famer. But let's face it, Miguel Cabrera probably would have retired already if there wasn't $25 million with his name on it just for showing up. But pretty darn cool to see him continue to rise up those record-breaking extra base hit stats there.
Yeah, I wonder from a business standpoint how much money is recouped from a team having a $25 million contract, but for a Hall of Fame farewell tour kind of thing. And like all the PR and all the marketing opportunities that are attached to, you know, Albert Pujols hitting number 700 and Miguel, like just all the footage and the reels that they're going to be able to spend, you know, ad infinitum.
Especially for a year like 2023 with the Tigers, where it's like, what are the fans even coming out for?
That's what I mean.
You know,
right?
It's nice to have that little caveat, that little extra nougat, if you will, for the fan base to be like, follow along and still somewhat keep their attention, because the Tigers, they are not a very good team. Of course, we will get into it. Lots to talk about today. Today's episode is brought to you by KK Poker. This is kind of cool, all right? So there is a little bit of a backstory to this. My old roommate, when I was in college and becoming a stand-up comedian, this was back 15, almost 20 years ago now, he is become the head agent of this KK Poker in Canada, which is a new poker site to Canada. And he even told us, he's like, don't worry about pushing it too much. We're going to set you guys up a room and you can just play poker with your walk-off Discord and so on and so forth. So that's kind of the approach Adam and I are taking with this. If you do use the code, if you are a poker player, like there is an incentive for you to sign up. Obviously it's the walk-off. You get $20 American just to sign up before you even put a dollar.
It's like $100 Canadian.
$100 Canadian. That's right. Roughly. And then if you do put $50 in, they're going to match that with 50 more American. So there is benefit there. But what we were using it for is they set up a private poker room for us. So if there's any walk-off fans there in the Discord, Patreon members, or you're not a Discord member, feel free to DM us and we'll shoot you a link to join the Discord. But we just thought it might be kind of fun during like a rain delay. Maybe we all hop in for, you know, a $10 buy-in or something. I'm going to lose that money for sure. I'm not a poker player, but
give the money back to the people, Scott.
Give the money back to the people. That's right. Anyways, KK Poker, the walk-off is the code, but we are going to be mentioning this in Discord too. And maybe we can play a game a month or something like that, where who knows, maybe we can even get all on Zoom or something like that, or put a channel in Discord where we can shit talk each other and stuff. But if you're into that, shoot us a DM or just bring it up in Discord. Anyways, KK Poker, the passcode, the code, if you will, is the walk-off. All right. Big show today. Huge comeback win yesterday. We are going to get right into the thick of it. Kevin Gausman continues to wow. Luis Rivera I mean, he's only got the windmill. That's the only move he does at third base. It's always go for home, I guess. So
we'll the training staff here has three jobs. It's keep Kevin Kiermaier healthy, keep George Springer healthy, and keep Louis Rivera's arm nice and loose because he's got
nice
that
and
windmill.
Loose, so he can wave Vladdy no matter what the scenario. Exactly. Ricky Tiedemann on his way back from the injured reserve list. We'll let you know where he is starting tonight. Series finale happens this evening for the Blue Jays Tigers. We'll get into it. And then, of course, those pesky Tampa Bay Rays continue to win. We will end the segment. We will end the episode, I should say, on a segment about the Rays, this win streak, the historic oomph behind it. And, of course, the Rays coming to town to Toronto tomorrow.
When you talked about the Rays and like historic MLB win streaks before the show, you made me laugh out loud with your comment. So I'm looking forward to that discussion. All right, let's get into the big win yesterday.
Yeah, that was a terribly timed moment for me to take a drink there. Adam that's was right. Wrapping up and I was still drinking, but that's right. What happened there.
If you hadn't have said anything, nobody
it would have seemed like such a natural pause. Exactly.
It was a good pause. Great spot for me to hit the clip button, move on to the next clip. So here we are wasting 20 seconds into this clip already. But now that we've weeded out the casuals and just the grounds crew remains, let's talk the big win yesterday because could have gone sideways.
So under an open roof, which by the way, April 12th, earliest the roof has ever been open, but under the open roof, the boys come all the way back from down 3-1, bottom of the 9. Vladdy gets a single. And this is what I love about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in 2023. Have we watched him at all, Adam? Push or seem to step out of his comfort zone and try and do too much? He is really playing within himself. He's reading the moments. It's the truly attention to details is finally starting to prove to be a mantra that some of these guys are holding themselves to, and Vladdy being one of them. He gets on base, 20th hit of the season for Vladdy, by the way. A nice little single, zero outs. That, of course, brings Chappie, the only man that makes Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s 420 batting average look minuscule. Chapman gets up there. He takes a walk. Wild pitch. They move to third and second. Varshow gets hit by a pitch. Like literally nobody out. Base is loaded. And these guys just keep passing the baton. You gotta love to see it. You're expecting a long ball with this lineup. But they can nickel and dime you too, right? Death by 1,000 paper cuts. That brings Whit Merrifield to the plate. And dude, I was just so impressed with Merrifield. He did exactly what he had to do. Long sack fly into deep center field that scores Vladdy. And even more importantly, with nobody out, it also moved Chapman to third base, who managed to tag and get into scoring position. Alejandro Kirk comes up. Another sack fly, right? Like these guys score two runs in the bottom of the 9th to tie this game and send it to extra innings. Not a long ball. No extra base hits.
I mean, we did capitalize on some pitching blunders from the Tigers. Does this comeback happen against a, let's just call it a real Major League Baseball team? And I know that's actually harsh words for the Tigers.
It is harsh words.
We did get some help.
We did absolutely get some help. And that was a question I was going to ask you too. Are you impressed, even though it's still just the Tigers?
Yeah, because those are the teams you need to beat. You don't get to 13-0 without beating up on the Tigers and the Athletics and the Royals. Like, mm-hmm. Everybody's going to get a chance to play these bad teams. And if we can pad our record, because, you know, the Rays are going to, you know, the Yankees are going to, you know, the Astros are going to. So, yeah, it's, I mean, snatching victory from the claws of defeat, right, is a
it's the difference between that wild card game and the bye in the first round. So, I mean, did we get some help? Sure. But it's nice to see that we were able to still capitalize when another team was making
the old error. Saying a win's a win really applies here. And I know that this
so is adequately put, Scott.
So adequately put, very adequate of me. Jordan Romano, we have talked about this several times in the last few weeks, but his Achilles heel does tend to be when there is runners in scoring position or even just a man on base. Yeah. Listen, Jordan Romano's numbers over the last 2 years without runners on, he is without a doubt a top five reliever in all of baseball.
Oh yeah, easily top five without runners on for sure.
And you just need to look at the numbers. You don't need to listen to two boneheads like Adam and I tell you. It's just right there in black and white. But my goodness, as soon as there's someone on base, the guy is a different pitcher. But last night, he did what he had to do. He got some big strikeouts. He got that ground ball. And yes, the guy moved to third, but he kept him there. One out. Jordan Romano shutting the door and giving the Jays a chance to put that stake in the heart of the Tigers and win that series last night. And that's exactly what they did. Love to see Kevin Kiermaier come up. I'm not a bunt guy, but the fact that now that there are some dudes who can do it, I'm warming up to that bunt single a little bit more, that sack bunt. When you can actually lay it down, of course, that moved Danny Jansen over to third base.
I am such a fan of small ball and like nickel and dime it, like whatever you want to call it. As long as the whole team buys in, it works out great. And I mean, tie game, extra innings, the Manfred man on second is the perfect time to lay down a sacrificial bunt. Because all you need is if you can get that guy to third, now you're a sack fly away or base hit away. The game's over, mm-hmm. right? You don't need multiple runs in that situation. And it's just nice that we have guys on this team now who can do it. Like when it's the obvious time to bunt, but you're going, well, like, good luck, Santiago Espinal.
Yeah. Is he going to wind up getting a third foul and it being an out on right. strikes or something like that.
Right. Is he going to bunt it straight watched? Up to the catcher? Whatever. Bunting is hard. And I know it's a skill guys don't practice anymore. So it is what it is. No shots at Santiago Espinal for that. There's plenty of other reasons to shoot at him. I'm not going to pick on his bunting skills. I don't blame any guy that doesn't have it. However, it is nice to have at least a handful of guys who situationally can lay one down.
And speaking of situationally being able to lay one down or read the game, George Springer, after Kiermaier moved Jansen to third base, was about as lights out as you can be. All he cared about was putting that ball in play on the ground and giving Jansen a chance to dash home to third base. He played it perfectly. He wasn't trying to do too much. And he did just that. And he did it right out of the gate. There wasn't the big buildup or anything. First pitch, away we go. Win Toronto Blue Jays. The sixth time this year that this team has come from behind to win. Now, I know we could put a negative spin on that. But the positive spin is this team doesn't give up. This team is never out of it.
And not against the Angels, too.
Against the Angels as well, absolutely. So, you know what? 8-4?
It's been a complicated 8-4, but we could be 4-8 for sure. So, you'll take it. I was texting with my brother the other day about Kevin Kiermaier. Do you want to extend this guy already or what?
I mean, it's hard not to.
I mean, it's hard not to. Let's just enjoy him while he's here, but it's. I can't believe how fast I'm a Kiermaier fan.
Oh, buddy, and you're not alone. This whole Toronto Blue Jays fan base, you should see Twitter. I know you're not a Twitter guy, but it is hilarious. There's about a dozen tweets every day of new Blue Jays fans being like, you know what? I hated him, but I'm on board now. I love him. KK's my guy.
I was listening to his post-game press conference there after the season opener at home when he had the home run robbery catch. And just listening to him talk about how he's like, oh, I'm probably going to rewatch that clip like 10 times a day for the rest of my life. And it's funny because like being a Ray for so long, probably never had an experience like that in his baseball career. Like, I mean, I know he's made highlight play catches before, but never in front of a home crowd of, you know, 30,000 plus.
Yeah.
Right. Like in Tampa 40,000
plus. Yeah.
But I mean, even in Tampa, what's the most they've ever had, you know, 10, 15, 20,000. Like, I don't know. It's cool for him. So
last year, the Rays were, or sorry, not last year. It would have been 2021 because they were a wild card team last year and they were on the road. But in 2021, they had home games in the playoffs and it didn't sell out until literally the day of. Can you imagine Toronto? Like the secondary ticket market, they'd be selling tickets for literally $2,500. You know, like it would be insane, the ticket price the exact same scenario and not with Tampa Bay. Okay, let's talk Kevin Gausman. I'm excited about the 2023 Kevin Gausman that we are seeing. 20 innings pitched, a 1.35 ERA. The dude pitched into the eighth inning yesterday. One of the things that impressed me last night too was in the seventh, still facing the meat of the order. And yes, I know he gave up that two-run home run. He gave up a couple dingers last night, the solo home run. I will take three earned runs over eight innings every single time from my starting pitcher, especially with the way this starting staff has performed to date, where there's so many question marks and so many early exits from these games. The Blue Jays needed last night out of Kevin Gausman.
I mean, yeah, especially with Bassett taking the bump today. Barrios, Kikuchi coming up, that day off for the bullpen is going to pay dividends in the upcoming games. So, yeah, Gausman was everything we could have asked for yesterday.
No one looks cooler than Kevin Gausman running to the mound at the beginning of the game when they have the drone following him. Right. And Pink Floyd money, the cash register comes in and then the guitar breaks in as his hair's flapping in the wind. Right. I mean, he's got a cool XFIP, right? A cool XFIP of what would you say adjusted, right? Plus 168. And yes, that's adjusted for weather.
Okay, good. I was going to say, if it's not adjusted for weather, I'm having no part of it. What is XFIP?
Cool XFIP. It's a cool stat.
Cool factor.
Yes, cool factor. Okay. But it's all It's all scaled for weather and stadium, right? Yes.
Gotcha. Very nice, cool XFIP for Kevin Gausman. How old is Kevin Gausman? Because he looks, every time I see him, he looks like,
younger.
he looks like a grown man version of like every kid I grew up playing baseball with. Like he's so youthful looking, but
yeah, he's 32. He's 32. And one thing about Kevin Gausman this season, and we all know how deadly his splitter is. It's the best pitch in baseball. And yes, I'm biased, but it is without a doubt a top 10 pitch in baseball. If you are a baseball nerd and just want to see some really cool stuff from Kevin Gausman, the pitching ninja, Rob Feldman, on Twitter, okay, at Pitching Ninja, check it out because he's posting constantly about Kevin Gausman and he does the overlay. So Kevin Gausman just added, well, not just added, he's been working on a slider to pair with that splitter for about 2.5 years, I guess, but it's really getting to a point where it is a good pitch. So if you watch the overlay that Pitching Ninja puts in, and basically what he does is he takes these two pitches, he overlays them over top of each other, and it looks identical. The delivery, the way the ball's coming out of his hand, you cannot tell what pitch it is until halfway to the plate when one dips inside on the hitter and the other one darts outside. It is, I just, as a hitter, all you can do is guess. And once you're literally up there just pissing into the wind, guessing, like, my goodness, it is over for you. This is why Kevin Gausman's strikeouts have been so high this year. He has been absolutely dominant with that addition of the slider. And listen, he's not using it all that much. I think the usage was at 10%, but it's just that extra wrinkle between the fastball and the splitter that gets hitters really off balance and really questioning what's coming, especially with how meticulous he is with mimicking that delivery. They are almost identical. It is a thing of beautiful of beauty. And undoubtedly, Kevin Gausman, the bright spot in this starting rotation this year. You need a guy like Gauz, a pitcher who every single time that he's on the bump, you know you got a chance to win.
Yeah, we're going to need a big year out of Kevin Gausman. I'm not worried about Alek Manoah having a bad year, but I am concerned if he has a serious regression that doesn't bode well for this team. So, yeah, getting eight out of Gausman, if he can give us 7 or 8 innings weekly, that's going to go very well for us, but we're going to need it.
I wouldn't say that Kevin Gausman is a legit ace quite yet, but he is right on the verge of that upper echelon of Major League Baseball starting pitching. He is right there, and I think this year will tell a lot as to where he lands.
Is that Gausman contract the best contract on Ross Atkins' resume?
I would say so. To date, yes. To date, yeah. Yes. And I mean, we'll see how this Kevin Kiermaier one plays out. But it's easy to make 1 year deals because they're so low risk, right? Even if Brandon Belt is a complete botch job and completely a waste of $9 million this season, who cares? Right? Like,
yeah,
basically no harm, no foul. It's not like Jose Berríos where you're tugging at your collar going, oh man, now we need at least 2 prospects to break to offset this disaster. And I mean, it is still a little early to really truly judge this Jose Berríos contract, but it has not looked pretty so far. I know I'm being overly optimistic. It's what we do here on
Toxic Positivity. Toxic
Positivity, baby.
Yeah, this Gausman contract is looking real sweet, especially with that Carlos Rodon contract the Yankees just handed out as just like the obvious comparable.
Yes.
Kevin Gausman, yeah, I don't know if he's ace status quite yet, but he's sure.
On the verge.
He's our number one pitcher, right?
I would say so. 2023 for sure. I mean, this season he has been, without a doubt. There's no argument to be made otherwise.
Yeah. I would say, not that it can work out this way, but in any one game, you gotta win situation, Gausman's the guy I want on the mound. And I would say, even when you look at last year's performances and take that into account, that's Gausman's my guy. So, sorry to all the Alek Manoah fans out there. I'm a big Alek Manoah guy too, but Gausman's my guy.
We believe in Big Puma. I'm not too concerned about him. He's going to pull it together. We do need Alek Manoah to right the ship, if you will. Although I'm not overly concerned. Speaking of contracts and needing prospects to break, Ricky Tiedemann, who hit the IL earlier in spring training, is ready to make his minor league debut.
What are we doing?
What do you mean?
We got Blue Jays base running to talk about.
Oh, my apologies, buddy.
Sorry.
Well, I've got it. I've got the opposite order. I sent you the order. I'm well aware that I sent the order to you.
Come on, man. Total botched job. Your sewer and my record here is a spotless producer. All right. Blue Jays base running. We'll just clip that whole part out. Speaking of Blue Jays base running.
Okay. We will speak Luis Rivera and Blue Jays base running here because it stood out last night. Like, truly, it stood out. It was a sore thumb. That first inning, watching Luis Rivera wave Vladdy home, only for him to be thrown out by 25 feet. It wasn't even close at him.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even close. If you're John Schneider, do you take Rivera aside and talk to him about that? Or do you think this aggressiveness is on John Schneider? Do you think he's already told Luis, he's like, wave him all the time, no matter what?
Yeah, I don't know what the right answer is there, because like you said, it wasn't even close. Unless there's some, maybe there's some, like, they're playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers, and they're planning for, like, hey, we're going to set up this aggressive tone. It's going to cost us a couple of runs early in the season, but we're going to benefit from it in the long run. When I don't even know what the right answer is there.
I am all for aggressiveness, but what I am dead against is giving away outs. And that's what yesterday.
I know you hate, like, you hate bunts, right? For that exact reason. You don't want to give away an out.
Well, I don't hate bunts. I'm not a big bunt guy, but a nicely executed bunt, I'm all for. But listen, when it comes to Luis Rivera and waving Vladdy home in that first inning, I mean, we watched Vladdy overrun again in the fourth. I mean, it wound up working out because of the player interference on the base path. But
you think that was interference, by the way? Let's talk that one. You don't think so?
I mean, not really.
I mean, I don't think there was physical contact, but there was certainly, I don't know, that third baseman's like, it's weird. It's an interpretation, I suppose, of like body language, but it did feel like when you watch it in real time, the way that the third baseman's moving, it felt like Vladdy is getting pushed further in foul territory than he would have needed to be. I don't know what the technical rule is on that. I'm sure someone will correct me.
I think they got the call right on that, except that there was no way Vladdy was going to get home. So it probably should have been called safe and him sent back to third rather than given home. But again, the interpretation of the rules is up to the umpire. They know it better than I do. So, and I'll take the run. I mean,
well, I don't think that's the rule. Like, if he's heading home, whether or not he would have been safe at home, if there's obstruction is called, you just get the next base.
I'm just going by what Dan Schulman was saying during the play, which was that whichever base he was closest to is where he probably should have been sent back to. But again,
oh, really?
I don't know the rule very well, Adam. So
we're two bozos, Scott. Yeah. What do we know?
Yeah.
I did learn a new rule though on the next play on that double steal when the catcher stepped on the umpire's foot and that negated the whole play. Interesting.
If I'm Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen, I'm taking note and I'm like, really, when I'm throwing.
Oh, yeah. Second, every fast runner going down to two, I'm backing way up. My windup is so deep. Oh, yeah. Big swooping windup. Who needs pop time when you got a nice big step in your windup? That's what I say.
So how much does Luis Rivera need to tighten up? Because there is another play that happened a couple games ago that stood out to me as well. That was sort of on Rivera, which was Brandon Belt holding up at second base when he could have easily gone to third. That was on that big Kirk hit. Remember where even you brought up, I think you're like, I could have got to third base on that. And John Schneider came out after that play in the post game press conference and mentioned that Brandon Belt, was confused by the signs given by Luis Rivera. And even though Rivera was giving him the stop sign, he meant for third base, not second base. So if your third base coach is costing you outs and costing you 90 feet, at what point do you step in as the manager?
Well, I mean, that feels like a new guy. Like,
yeah,
a miscommunication, but that feels like with Brandon Belt, it's like, no, 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 we have a system here. You're new.
Yeah.
You don't understand the system. You know, let's get on the same page. Hopefully that's what spring training was for.
Yeah.
Right. Is for getting on the same page and figuring out systems. No, I don't know. I'm fine with Louis Rivera as a third base coach. I wouldn't even step in. Like, I don't know.
Worst case scenario,
if I'm John Schneider, I would absolutely throw him under the bus publicly to save face for one of my base runners. Like in a situation where
the belt scenario for sure.
So that's that being said, run baby run, green lights all day. I love the aggressive base running. I love the aggressive Bobichet. Can we talk that?
Yeah.
Bobichet on Vladdy stretching bobblehead day, the top of the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
Bobichet can't make a good throw to save his life, but
he kind of saved the game there, though. I mean, hey, yes, Vladdy had to stretch to do it, but
it's aggressive Bobichet. And that's, again, I'm not saying that like Carlos Correa couldn't have made that same play, but this is why I like having an aggressive shortstop who's willing to like push a close play, right? And like, if he's gonna be there by a mile, should he eat it? Sure, I'll concede that, but I don't want anyone in the field being like gun shy to throw the ball,
especially
that,
not in the.
And that was a situation where
two outs exactly.
That's the thing is, I mean, can Bobichet be overconfident at times? Yeah, but I would take that versus the hesitant, insecure Bo that we've also seen at moments. Give me confident Bo and a gold glove at first base to help him out.
Yeah.
It's a match made in heaven. I don't know what else to say, but I'm glad that he's limits of his skill set is what I will say. Okay.
I was a little surprised by the fan base's reaction online, and I don't know why. I should be used to it by now. But man, like, just no credit to Bo at all for even getting to that ball. Slow ground ball.
Low grounder. Roller, charging hard.
Just past the pitcher. Guy at third base who would
game
be the
on the
winning
line.
Run. Game on the line.
Yeah, winning run is scoring. We're on its way home.
And he gets to it. He gets to it and he makes the play. Yes, Vladdy had to stretch, but Vladdy was pumped, right? Like, yeah. You saw that reaction afterwards. That wasn't a, oh, I'm so glad I saved it for Bo. That was, yes, let's go get it.
And Vladdy's racking up the hardware, so he doesn't mind those throws. Like, as long as the throw, and this is funny, like, I don't know if you, big fantasy football guy, there was a NFL wide receiver, Calvin Johnson, shout out to my Detroit Lions fans of the world. But there was a graphic they used to put up. He's like 100 feet tall, but they would put this graphic up because he would make these just wild catches, right? He would always bail out his quarterback on these terrible throws, but they would do this graphic of him standing in front of like a double garage door. And they would be like, this is his catch radius, right? Cause he can stretch and jump and, you know, whatever, right? It's like 12 feet in each direction. It's just ridiculous. That's how I feel about with Vladdy at first is, just get it to something he can reach.
Yes.
And I don't need a better arm than that. Like, throw it as hard as you can and be reachable for Vladdy. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy. You know, don't throw it into the stands. We can't have that. I will concede that. But we got a gold glover at first. Let's take advantage and let's have Bo giving it 110% whenever we can. I don't know. I like that play in the ninth inning. I was glad to see Bo playing with reckless abandon and just going for it, pushing his talents. So
that was a play. Not every shortstop gets to that ball. Yeah. Just good range.
He's the opposite of Derek Jeter, right? Derek Jeter had terrible range, great arm. Bobichet, mm-hmm. great range, terrible arm, but he got to the ball. So
yeah, he did get to the ball and he did save the game there. So credit where credit is due. Okay. Now let's talk Ricky Tiedemann. It was announced just yesterday by friend of the show, Scott Mitchell from TSN, that Ricky Tiedemann off of the IL. He is officially instated with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats and is going to be making his minor league debut at AA for 2023 tonight as he takes the ball. And, of course, the number one prospect in the Blue Jays system. So all eyes will be on him. He really had a heck of a showing in spring. Turn some heads. He is not ready for the big leagues yet, according to the organization, but he is getting there. And I think, according to many scouts around Major League Baseball, suspect that he'll be contributing to this Blue Jays team at some point this season. What would you want to see out of Ricky Tiedemann in Double A before he gets the call up to Buffalo?
Ooh, good question. What do I want to see? I want to see a very low walk rate. That's it.
I love it.
Everything else, I don't care what the K's and the advanced metrics on how fast or how much spin. I just want to see he's got control and he's doing what he's supposed. Because if he's got a low walk rate, everything else is working out.
The thing with Ricky Tiedemann is his stuff is elite. It's already been well stated that he has big league stuff. So what needs to happen now, just like Adam said, is lower the walks, continue to hit your spots, continue to display that elite stuff.
Does he have a high walk rate?
It's not too bad. Maybe double check, but no, it wasn't ridiculous or anything. It wasn't ridiculous.
Okay, walk rate in 2022 was 3.3 walks per nine.
So if he can lower that by a walk per nine.
Yeah, if he can get that around 2.5 and keep the strikeouts around 13.5,
you take that every day. You take that every day. Of course, the big lefty probably should get the call up to Buffalo. My guess is before the middle of May. But you know they're going to let him sit in Double A for a month or so, get his feet wet, and dominate. And once he's dominating, he will get that call up to Triple A pretty quick.
It's becomes a lot harder to ignore once he's in Triple A. Pitching well, and you've got Jose Berríos on the mound every 5 days. I don't know. I'm sure interested to see what this pitching staff looks like in the middle third of the season.
I know yesterday on Mailbag, we had a question about what are the options, all the talk about Kikuchi and Berríos and the rope they have. If they do run out of rope, what are the options? And the options are not very good. But Ricky Tiedemann is a guy to keep your eye on. Top prospect in the Blue Jays system. And a dude who truly could step in and contribute when he's ready. All the scouts saying it should be this year. Time will tell.
Ricky Tiedemann, 78 innings pitched in the minor leagues last year. Is there a workload concern for his rookie season?
I don't think any more than you would typically see. I know that they say a 50% work increase
over the year before
is about what they like to do. So if he was at 78 last year,
like 110, 120.
120. Yeah, that's my guess. So, they'll be an innings cap. They'll be an innings cap on him, but I think that they will. I mean, fingers crossed the dude stays healthy, right? Like that's a big little asterisk on this whole projection of where he winds up. But as long as he's able to take the ball every 5 days, I mean, the kid should be a contributing member to this Jays team at some point in 2023. Even if it's a bullpen spot. By the way, which is something that has happened more and more around baseball with some of these top prospects. Send them up at the end of a year with a contending team, right? Maybe get some innings in the bullpen, similar to Aaron Sanchez when he was with the Blue Jays in 2015 and 16. So, keep an eye on Ricky Tiedemann. Excited to see what happens with him this year. Final game of this Jays series, buddy. They've already taken the series, winning the first two games, and now they are looking for the sweep. Ian Turnbull takes the mound for the Tigers with a sparkling 13.5 ERA, making Chris Bassett's 10 ERA look pretty good. Yeah. Chris Bassett, of course, going to look to lower his ERA from that horrible opening start he had. He looked pretty decent last time on the mound, gave the Jays six innings. He did allow some runs, but he did pick up his first win as a Blue Jay. Looking to build on that. Where are you at on Chris Bassett, buddy? You feeling better about him?
I mean, will jury's today out.
Will a good showing from Chris Bassett today make you feel better about him? Will it erase that first start of the year?
Yeah. It's the Tigers. So a good outing does not make me feel as good as a bad outing would make me concerned.
Yes.
Can I say that? Yeah, expectations for Chris Bassett today. Ooh, I'd sure like to see him pitch deeper into the game. Like if he can pitch into the seventh. But I mean, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. It's Rays coming to town, and we're going to talk Rays here in a minute. We got Kikuchi, we got Berríos, and we got probably a lot of work from our bullpen. Talked right off the top, Gausman gave the bullpen some rest, pitching eight yesterday. Chris Bassett can come in and pitch into the seventh, and we're just throwing out Bass and Mesa to clean up a 7-0 victory. That would be sweet.
That would be sweet. The best case scenario for sure.
Hey, the bats can help too. The bats can help the bullpen too.
The bats sure can.
Scoring more than three runs against the Tigers.
And truly, this is one of the reasons why the Blue Jays went out and spent $60 million on Chris Bassett over the offseason. He is a horse. He is an inning eater. He is a guy who, yes, is probably only going to put up a 4 ERA for you, but he should take 7 innings off of your plate every fifth time he's on the mound.
That's the thing, man, is if we can't get 7 innings against the Tigers from Chris Bassett, not his first start of the season, like, yeah. More than anything, that's what I want to see out of Chris Bassett today. Give me 7. You know what? Give me 7 innings. If there's 4 earned runs, it is what it is. But give me like 105 pitches, 7 innings. And like you said, that's what he's been brought in for. Eat innings for us.
It would be beautiful to see them sweep the Tigers. It's been a good trip home to Toronto so far. The first two games, the boys looked good. Obviously, needing to come from behind both times isn't necessarily ideal, but the fact they did it is a bright spot and something to hang your hat on, especially with the big bad Rays coming to town tomorrow. This is going to be truly the first big test within this division for the Blue Jays. They've yet to face a division rival. The AL East looks as if it's going to be a hell of a dogfight. And could very well see 3 playoff teams come out of the East this year. Every win matters. So yeah, if they can sweep the Tigers here and then take on this Tampa Bay Rays team that is now, after beating Boston yesterday 9-7, at 12 consecutive wins, they are looking to tie the major league record for win streaks out of the gate to start a season. Today, if they can beat the Red Sox and go to 13-0, that is the major league, ties the major league record. And then, boy, it would be sweet to see Toronto put an end to that.
That would be sweet. You want to talk this Rays winning streak?
Yeah.
Historic reference framework around it.
Historically,
they are pushing the record for the longest unbeaten streak to start an MLB season. The record right now is the 82 Braves and the 87 Brewers, who both started at 13-0. So they can tie that record with a victory tonight from 13-0. That is not the longest record in MLB history, only the longest record to start a season. We were talking before we recorded here. Longest streak in MLB history, longest winning streak, was 26 games by the New York Giants.
And that was back when, Adam?
1916, so 100 years
1916, which made me ask before he hit the record button, wait, I thought the Oakland Athletics had that at 20 wins. No, that's the modern era. Modern era, Scott. Not because I was like, era. Well, what is Moneyball even about then?
It's just a pretty good streak.
Yeah. And then, of course, that 20 game streak by the Athletics was beat by the Cleveland Indians, now the Guardians. Indians at the time. What was that, Adam? 2017?
2017, they had a 22 game win streak. So there you go. Also notable, the Chicago Cubs had a 21 game win streak in 1935, but no one cares about the Cubs here. So there you go.
All the worst and all disrespect to the Rays. Hopefully the Red Sox beat them tonight. And if not, it's going to be a heck of a series as they come to Toronto. And I'm looking forward to this Rays-Jays series this weekend. Yeah,
full Rays preview tomorrow. But that's the little teaser. Let's get past the Tigers. Let's take the 3-0 victory this series. And then I'd say on to Tampa Bay, but it's still in Toronto. So we'll see you tomorrow.
Exactly. So thank you to the grounds crew, all of you who tune in, hit that like button, have subscribed. We appreciate the listenership. Truly, we do. A tip of the hat to all the Patreon members. Thank you so much for the buck a week that you are contributing. Of course, if you do join Patreon, it gives you exclusive access to everything instantly. So all of our shows are available to you literally minutes after we record. All of your interviews are available the second that we record, so that, you know, if we wind up, sometimes we need to sit on interviews for a couple weeks, maybe even a month, depending on
sometimes
the sensitivity of it all.
Sometimes I delete the file on accident.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it's that been put happened. Up on Patreon before we get there. Yeah, there you go.
Follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. Shoot us a DM if you'd like a link to the Discord. That place is a happening Blue Jays baseball chat fest regularly. Again, we'll gladly send you the Discord link. You just need to reach out. All the best, everybody. A happy Thursday. Go Blue Jays, go. See you tomorrow.
Bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.